Just as a closing thought, maybe I can get both of your thoughts about this at a more macro level. And I'm just kind of curious because you both have worked with us for a long time. And one of the things that we've realized over the years is that our approach, which is reflected in these surveys, when we go to meetings, we ask poll questions, is really oriented around what people do. It's not, yes, the evidence comes in, but the one thing that we try to bring in that is not that easy to figure out with guidelines and consensus is, what are people actually doing in their practice? Interestingly, the boards, that's the way the boards, I just took the boards for the first time in a long time. And I was surprised because people were saying, oh, you know, your stuff really prepares for the board. But that's the questions on the boards. It's like, what do you do? And so I'm just kind of curious because I could envision, you know, we have these fantasies about really a whole integrated system based on what you all do. So think about up-to-date NCCN guidelines, et cetera. But instead of evidence and levels of evidence, it's just these huge, you know, grids of what people do, what people are saying to their patients. We have a project right now in breast cancer where we're asking people with HER2-positive disease, okay, well, what numbers do you give to your patients? Like, if you had a patient who's node positive, what number would you give for a relapse with and without opportunity, all those numbers? Any thoughts, Alan, about that kind of strategy and how it would play out?
Well, I actually agree that the best way for oncologists to learn the lesson and to remember what message we're trying to get across is by hearing case presentations and what we do.
Tony, we have this fantasy that you could go into electronic medical record and you'd be in a situation, not just trying to decide about what therapy, but like, what do you do when you see toxicity? Do you decrease the dose? Do you stop it? And just, you know, asking people, okay, here's the situation, like, what do you do? Do you think that docs would want to access that?
You know, I think, again, it's an all-comer. So if you think about all the guidelines you mentioned, the problem, they're very sterile. And they don't apply most of the time to the, they're good tools, oftentimes for, you know, justifying reimbursement, et cetera, to support reimbursement. But you essentially lose the practical aspect of a day-to-day management of the patient. So the long answer to your question is absolutely. I mean, that affects outcome. How you manage patients and their toxicities and what you do with their therapy can affect their outcome if you don't do it the right way. We know that with regorafenib and the REDOS studies. If you don't do it the right way, you actually may lose some benefit from a drug, you know, that is modest in its activity, but, you know, modest is better than nothing. And if you don't do it the right way, you are exposing patients to primarily toxicities and you give up very quickly on them. So I definitely think that for a lot of our patients, understanding the value of balancing efficacy with toxicity and what to do, like the stop-and-go approach, is the best thing that happened to colorectal oncology. Is when you give those patients a break or you put them on maintenance after 3, 4 months of treatment, you're essentially giving them life. And I think that's very important, and that helps both the oncologist to better manage their patients and, of course, you know, maximizes the benefit of the treatment to the patient.